G'day, and a hearty Aussie salute to flick away the flies.
Oh, flies. Flies, yes. There was more flies there than pound notes in the Bank of England.
A one, two, three.
We're in the Australian outback to meet bush men and women from long ago. And along the way, I'll spin you some yarns. I'm John Francis. And these are my Red Dust Tapes.
You know what that is? I wish it was a fish with a great long tail. I wish it was a fish with a great long tail. What a tiny little winkleback, or a smackler away in the bottom of the deep blues. That's hard to play, you know. You've got to get the you can't get enough wind. You've got to, you know, when you're going, it's going in too much the one way. I wish it was a fish with a great long tail.
Now, that bent-over bundle of sinewed energy was Franco Albertoni, who was one of the very first miners at the Andamooka opal field. Please stand by. I'll bring you the full Franco Albertoni story shortly in this episode. But first... Yeah, thanks for that alert, Butcher Bird. In the previous episode of Red Dust Tapes, I interviewed Charles, or Charlie, Gill, who in 1919 started his first job at Wirralpa Station in the north of South Australia. Well, I've since found an extra bit of interview with Charlie Gill that I'd forgotten I had, where he's talking about goat carts. And when Mr. Gill talks of the pre-war years, he's talking about the years before the First World War.
At Blenman in the pre-war years, there was quite a lot of goats in Blenman. People had their herd of goats, were allowed to keep 12 to run on the common. And these goats were used as meat and also the milk. And then there was the goat teams that the boys had. They were goats, usually about six in number to a team. A four-wheel wagon, steel wheels, and they used to cart wood. The load, six goats would pull, be about a quarter of a ton, I suppose, was to sell this to the people in Blenman for two bob a load. And we had a well at our place at Blenman too, and time when the water got short, they used to come there and we used to cart water, but we didn't used to be charging for that, was free, but we used to cart water to the people. That was one aspect that we used to get quite a lot of fun out of it. That, I mean, you were quite a capitalist if you had a goat team.
Now that was the sound of a pneumatic drill being used underground at the Andamooka opal fields. Australia produces 95% of the world's precious opal, with Cooper Pedy and then Andamooka producing the majority of that, although Lightning Ridge in New South Wales, with its black opal, delivers the most wealth. Andamooka is 286 kilometres north of Port Augusta in South Australia, sandwiched between Roxby Downs uranium mine and the tip of the mighty Lake Torrens salt pan. So we're underground at Andamooka. Pneumatic drills were widely used by the time I first visited Andamooka in 1968, as were bulldozers. But in those days there were also plenty of traditionalists who still preferred the hard grind of the hand auger. When I was recording this, the temperature on the surface would have been well over a century, or in Celsius, well over 40 degrees. Down below, though, a bit cooler, except when you're working hard to turn that auger. A drill, or auger, was used to make a hole deep enough to stuff gelignite, used to blow out a section of the sandstone rock, which would then be loaded into a wheelbarrow to travel through the narrow, often cramped tunnels, then hauled to the surface in a bucket using a windlass.
How many of these holes would you drill a day, Mick?
Well, two, that's all I need for this.
But how often do you have to use the auger like this?
If you're lucky, once a day.
It's obviously hard work. Do all of them do it by hand?
Not this way.
You're obviously an old-timer. At it, how long have you been doing it now?
Well, on this field, 10 years.
Have you had much success in that time?
Pretty lousy.
They all say that, though, don't they?
This is fair dinkum.
Why do you use a carbide lamp instead of an electric lamp?
Well, I find this better on the eyes.
Carbide, or acetylene lamps, were the traditional lamps used by miners. You'd put a little bit of calcium carbide in a rock form in the body of the lamp, and then you'd add water, and this would produce acetylene gas, and this could then be lit to give you light.
What's the purpose of the holes that you're drilling now?
To blast this entrance through into this other tunnel.
Do you think that you are possibly on to Opal at present?
No.
You're just driving on in the hope of finding something?
That's it, yes. In this job, you're always hoping, John.
Well, Mick, while you're... I don't want to disturb you while you're drilling the face, so I'll go over and speak to your partner, Alf.
Okay.
Alf, how long have you been down in the mines?
Oh, roughly the same time as Mick.
Always at Andamooka?
Always at Andamooka, yes. A little bit of prospecting for gold years ago. Never did any good on that.
Why did you come to Andamooka? Why do you stay here?
I like it. Peaceful, reasonably, and away from the stresses and strains of the cities.
Have you had much success?
No, very limited.
But you have had made enough to live on?
Enough to live on. Roughly in the same financial position as when I arrived here about 10 years ago.
Now, you're about to blow a face here. There is, of course, the possibility that you may come across some opal. If you do find some opal, and if the rest of the field gets to know about it, what chance is there, do you think, of somebody coming along and trying to rob it at night?
Well, if we'll put it this way, if we found opal here, there'd be one of us sleeping here, because the possibilities, if they knew, not that we'd talk, if they even thought that you were getting opal, somebody might just come down to have a look around if you weren't here, and the possibility is you could find the team in at night and have taken it out when you come to work in the morning.
Have you ever found signs of people having been down your shaft?
Yes.
Do you think the Christmas holiday period, when a lot of people go to Adelaide or go to interstate because it is a little too hot to work, is going to be a period when there could be a lot of robbing?
There's always that possibility, but what can you do about it? See, what can you do? There's no answer. I mean, they've only got to be organised. They see anybody on the move, and if you've been around up yourself up top, all they've got to do is to lie down behind a dump. You could have 100 people walking around and you wouldn't see them. I mean, on a dark night, I wouldn't say on a moonlight night, where you may be exposed, but on a dark night, they just lie down anywhere and you'd never see them. The only way to really treat them is for a little bit of local justice, but the minute you do that, you're in trouble with the law. You're not allowed to protect yourself.
In other words, you're thinking here of vigilante squads and this kind of thing.
No, I don't. I wouldn't even go for vigilante squads, but surely a person, you can put traps in your own mine that sort of illegal miners come down, that you've got some protection. If you do anything to protect yourself, you're setting a man trap and you're immediately breaking the law. I mean, vigilantes, I don't think are an answer to it at all, because you've got 50 people together. For argument's sake, you've only got to have one of those in that 50. Who knows what the vigilantes are doing? What good are they? I mean, you can just one person to take the information back to the gangs, and where are you? You're in the same position, or even worse position than you were before.
Well, we'll get our
top. You're ready to blast now, are you? Or just about?
I'd like to put these in, make these sausages ready. About 2 minutes once this is done.
So we'd better get up top.
Okay.
You want the bucket down, do you?
Coming down.
Many a man had his head split open with these, with a windlass handle. He's been landing a full bucket of dirt, and he's lost his balance, and he's had many, many stitches going on up at the hospital. Oh, well, we're there now.
You've lit the fuses now, have you, Mick?
Yes, she's on the go.
So you've got to get up in a bit of a hurry.
Well, plenty of time.
We believe in safety first. Plenty of fuse, us.
Susanna, don't you cry.
Let's get back to Franco Albertoni.
Yes, I've travelled about a bit in my time, and troubles I've seen a few, but I find it better in every clime to paddle your own canoe.
I first visited Franco in 1968, and then again in 1971, when at that stage Franco was 88, but still firing on all six cylinders. Franco and his brother Andrew first worked at the Cooba Pedy field in the 1920s, very soon after it started to develop. In 1930, they moved east to Andamooka. They were two of the earliest miners on the field. Australia at that time was deep in the Great Depression, so when word got out about Opal and Andamooka, there was a rush to the area by men desperate to make some money.
What was it like, Andamooka, back in those days?
Oh, well, when we come here first, there was only about a dozen men here altogether, and there was one woman. And there was no mail here, there was no stores here.
What was the road like up from Woomera?
Oh, never worse. You'd have to take a pick and shovel every time you went in. Well, it'd take us to get to Port Augusta, it'd take you about 2 or 3 days.
Well, why did you come here first?
Oh, well, you had to go somewhere looking for a job. We heard about this place. Well, my brother said we'd be nearer home anyway. See?
Mm. You were over at Cooba Pedy before this, were you?
Yes, you see. This is a bit nearer home anyway. Mm. And no intention of ever stopping here, and I'm still here.
Did you have much success when you first came here?
No, never got much at all. I'll tell you what, this is true, they wouldn't believe you now. The highest price you'd get for opal was £10 an ounce.
Mm.
See? And we were here 6 months the first time. And we got £60 between two of us for 6 months. I don't think that's much.
Mm.
Well, we went away looking for a job, and we had rifles and guns, and we were shooting kangaroos and poisoning foxes and that. And we was away 7 months.
Mm.
Well, that just shows you that we couldn't have got much. We wouldn't have stopped away. We'd have come straight. But anyhow, at last it was getting cold. The weather was getting cold. We was trying to poison fox between here and Port Augusta, and they wouldn't bite, and there was no kangaroos. So at last my brother said, oh, he said, I think we'll go back. We heard about a new place found, this Boundary Riders over here. We heard about that. And so we come back, and now I'm still here.
Hmm. Well, you must have had a bit of success then when you went to Boundary Riders.
Oh, not much, no. Not much more than Tucker.
You opal miners are all the same, though, you opal gougers. You never admit if you ever found anything anyway. So I'm sure you've found a fair parcel of opal in your time.
Oh, not very much. In fact, you don't really know how much.
Was mining much different in those days? Was mining much different in those days?
Oh, different altogether. There was none of the machines here at all. There were no such things as bulldozers. That's why the thing's all ripped out. If there was no bulldozers, there'd be a lot more open. It'd last a lot longer.
Mm. Mortised into the sandstone hill across the rock-strewn road from the Andamooka post office stood a mud and stone humpy, so old and weather-worn, yellow and ragged, that it looked like an extension of the hill itself. Few visitors at Andamooka took much notice of the place, and few would have noticed its owner either, for Franco Albertoni rarely showed himself, except on Thursdays when he'd crossed the road to go shopping, or during the winter months when it was cool enough for him to potter about in his backyard. Franco was like a little elf, with his happy apple cheeks, small eyes, soft lips and pixie ears. His features were somewhat ageless, but one might expect that he would be about 65. 65? I'm 88, he yelled, at the same time throwing his arms forward in a quick, punchy movement and jumping both feet off the ground, head cocked to one side and his eyes sparkling with fun. I'm told I'm the oldest person here and I ought to be dying, but I'm getting younger and more active all the time. And just to prove it, he did another little hop.
That's Mother McLeod's reel, old Scotch one. I've had women here in this place dancing. One of them said, you know, play Scotch, and I played that, and she hopped up dancing around, and another bloke was there. He hopped up and got out there and danced around.
You obviously like the reels and the jigs, lively tunes.
Yes.
I suppose you've got quite a bit of Scotch or Irish in you, have you?
Oh, well, my grandfather, you're talking now. You want to be killed. My grandfather's name was Paddy Ryder. He come from Ireland.
Well, how on earth did you get a name called like Francis Albertoni?
Well, because my father was Swiss, the Greasy Dick.
So you're quite a mixture then.
Yes. It's all just Australia, nothing else.
Yeah,
well, not a crow either, though.
Not a crow either.
No, not a crow either.
What part of Australia are you from?
Victoria.
Franco was born in Druin, Gippsland, in Victoria in 1883. His Swiss father died when he was 9, and the family moved to Lyndhurst Siding on the Northern Railway in South Australia. That's where his stepfather had a wine saloon. I had 2 brothers, he said, 2 sisters and a half-sister. Now I've only got 1.5 sisters. For many years, Frank's brother Andrew travelled the bush with him, but the other brother, George, he preferred the life in the city in Melbourne. George was different to Andrew and me. He went gambling and all that. I don't know what was wrong with George. He wouldn't get up in the morning. He'd stay out late at night. He didn't do much work either. He didn't seem to have much go in him. He'd have been better off if he hadn't won so much money. His playboy brother George was in his 90s when he died.
I have no wife to bother me life, no sweetheart to prove untrue. And it's all day long with a laugh and a song, and I'll paddle my own canoe.
Franco has always worked in the bush. His first job was in a silver, copper and antimony mine in Mount Fitton, near Arkaroola in the Flinders Ranges. He was getting 15 shillings a week. In 1914, he worked at Oakden Hills Sheep Station between Lake Gardner and Torrens in South Australia. He and his brother Andrew also worked with camels during the construction of the Transcontinental Railway line in the hot, dry sandhills at places like Uldea on the Nullarbor Plain. Andrew died many years ago, and by 1971, when I last met him, it had been 20 years since Franco had dug for opal. Now I get my pension, he said. I've never had so much money in my life. Although he admitted he had an advantage over pensioners in the city. He paid only £10 a year for his quarter-acre block of land, and there were no other rates or taxes to worry about. Anyway, he added, why do I want to dig for opal now? I'd rather dig in my garden. And so saying, he led me out into the 115-degree sun to search the concrete hard earth for the hardy remnants of his potato crop, which was struggling to survive on the sprinkling of water that Franco could afford to spare from the muddy bottom of his well.
There's not much water. I don't know how much water's in the well. I've been away, you see. This was down as only as low as, the lowest it's been was 2 gallons a day. That's not much. But even that would do me. But up to this last few years, since all these people have come in and sunk all these wells, I think they've robbed it. But it used to be not too bad.
What's the water like?
Oh, there's best of good water.
Well, prove it to me. Let's get some water up and give us a taste.
Yes. Look out. You can get back a bit and I let the thing go. ¼-foot deep.
It's a long way down.
Oh, well, that's not deep as the other wells.
You dug this well by hand, did you?
I myself. I never done that when I was 70.
You dug this well when you were 70?
Yes.
25 feet down?
Yes, and timbered it all up, every stick, everything I'd done myself.
This place here, it's a fascinating house that you're living in. When did you first build it?
Well, when we came here first, there was nothing else. We didn't have... Look, we had to go down the creek and get the bushes.
Mm.
We wouldn't have bushes if we could get... Look, up here, look at the houses they got. We'd had galvanized iron, too, if we could have got it.
Well, the roof is made from a pine of some kind. I take it that it's native pine, is it?
That's only native pines, yes.
Well, where did you get them from? Because as far as I can see, for miles and miles, there isn't a tree.
They've cut them all out. You're not supposed to cut pines. Well, you can't now because they're all gone.
Yeah.
Nearly all gone. Well, down the creek, there's tea trees. This comes from down the creek. Yeah. Well, there's tea tree bushes. You want to go down and have a look. There's nothing to get down about a couple of miles.
It must be a very cool place in the summertime compared to some of the...
It's cooler than any other place here.
It's partly dug underground, is it?
Oh, no, it's not. It's only in there. It's a little bit that end, like up the top place is a little bit, not much.
Mm. Well, it's very rough hewn. What's the fireplace made from?
Well, that's only... I built that stones, all stones and mud. Mm. See?
And you've lived here by yourself for 36 years?
Well, no, but myself, there was the 3 of us, you know, first. Then we've had other blokes since with us, and my brother, we used to 2 of us to be with them. Most of the time, of course, since then, it's only me.
Mm-hmm.
See, but of course, I got neighbours just around here.
Mm.
Plenty of neighbours.
Do you do any mining at all?
Oh, no, I'm only mining my own business.
Mining your own business. Well, I suppose you'd be the oldest resident here.
Oh, yes, I am, as far as I know.
Mm. Mm. Do you think that you'd ever want to leave?
You'd want to leave?
Mm.
Never want to die here.
I don't think you'll be doing that for a while either, looking at you and knowing your character. It looks as though you'll be sticking around for a long time yet.
But hey, I don't care whether I do or not. It doesn't bother me. I'm not afraid of going to the yellow rooster or anything. I reckon this is the only place where it is.
You reckon this could be hell on earth, do you?
I reckon that's where it is.
Yeah. Well, why? If this is a hell on earth, this is something I can't understand. It must have been pretty near a hell on earth in the early days. Absolutely shocking roads, taking days to get to Port Augusta.
Yes, yes.
The country extremely hot and, of course, no facilities at all. Hard to find water, and the water wouldn't have been very good. So why did you stick it out?
Oh, well, you was younger then. Young and foolish.
That second time that I visited Franco, the thermometer in his humpy read 105 degrees, or 40 degrees Celsius, and even then it was much cooler than outside. As usual, he was dressed in full-length denim clothes, with his shirt buttons fastened to the neck. I don't go about naked like you young blokes in your shorts. I like to get dressed up. I even wear long underpants in the summer. People think I'm mad, but that's my style.
It's all very well to depend on a friend. That's if you proved him true. But you'll find it better by far in the end to paddle your own canoe.
Susanna, don't you cry.
I suppose when you were here, well, many years ago now, it would have been very comforting to have some kind of musical instrument with you.
Oh, it was. See, there was no such thing. There was no wirelesses. See, the first of all that come in, whatever I seen, was the phonograph. And they used to have earphones at that. Everybody couldn't listen to. You had to wait till somebody else had a go at it.
Franco was ever ready to reveal what he believed was the secret of his active life. I found this book, Good Health and How to Keep It, and it was the best thing that could have happened to me. You see old men of 40, bald, and they can't tie their own shoelaces. Here I am, 88, and I can still jump over the moon. And just to prove it, he clenched his fists, bent his arms, and kicked a booted foot high into the air. People eat too much. I remember my mother trying to make me eat a big meal 3 times a day, even when I didn't feel like it. This book taught me to only eat as much as I felt that I needed, and I felt a lot better for it. Frank's table was littered with jars of various vegetable extracts, although he still liked a bit of meat to balance his diet. He ate little bread, preferring Johnny cakes instead. He loved honey, using it rather than sugar. "Look what it does for the bees," he pointed out.
"My wants are small, I cannot call, for my bets are played, I do. Drive away strife in the ocean of life, and I'll paddle my own canoe."
Early in the afternoon, we walked to the well to pull up some water, then gave it time for the mud to settle before we used it to make some tea. Hauling on the windlass, he said, "A man once told me that whoever made the world made a hell of a mess of it. I say no, it's up to us. There are lots of wonderful things to do."
"But love your neighbour as yourself in the world as I go travelling through. And never sit down with tea and all frown, but paddle your own canoe."
Just for a moment, as we walked towards a tree to escape the flagging sun, Franco looked a tiny, slow, frail old man. But only for a moment. Back in the shade, he picked up and played another hearty tune on his accordion.
"I wish it was a fish with a great long tail."
I laughed with the music and with the happy little man sitting on the box in front of me, tapping his boots to the rhythm, absorbed in the melody pumping out of that silver-red instrument between his hands. Then it was time to go, and I thanked him for entertaining us and for telling us so much about his life. "Oh, I'm just as likely to forget what I said and say something different. There's many a man can change his mind, but cannot change his socks." He turned his ear to the accordion and pumped out another tune. " Well, the fire's crackling with the scent of gum leaves, the billy's boiling, the Southern Cross is turning in the night sky, and after a cuppa and a bit of a turn on the harmonica, I reckon I'll hit my swag. So this is John Francis and my Red Dust Tapes. If you have further info on the person or people or country I've featured today, please contact me at reddusttapes.au. And please wander on back to hear more interviews I've recorded with bush characters, Australia's pioneer airmen, and for more yarns from my outback adventures and beyond.